There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to A Word with Tom Merritt. I'm Tom Merritt. On this show, I have the pleasure and privilege of sitting down with some of the smartest, most interesting people in the world and talking about how we think, because we all think differently. And that's good, because we can't know everything. So it's good that there's other people that have insights on things that we don't know about. These are the kinds of conversations that I had growing up with my grandpa Carl in his front room, my grandma Roxy in her front room. I got lots of different ways of looking at the world. Great conversations. And it all led me to this moment right now. Welcome into the front room, Anthony Lamos.
Hello, Dr. Merritt.
It's
happy to be here.
I'm a doctor. Well, you know, Brian Cooley used to call me Dr. Merritt too.
That's where I got it.
Yeah. Is that where you took it? Okay.
Yep.
That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah, B-O-L, yeah.
Amos is what people who are familiar with you will think you are called mostly. But I introduced you by your government name, Anthony Lamos. That's just It's just a squishing of that, right?
It is. It's a portmanteau of the two caused by a ninth grade substitute teacher who asked me what my name was as I was walking out of the room to run an errand for him. And I said, Anthony Robin Lemos. And he was like, what was that kid's name? Was it Amos? And when I got back to class, everybody was like, Amos. Hey, Amos. And it stuck.
That's interesting. So, it could have been something that drove you crazy, but you embraced it.
I mean, it's better than Tony.
Yeah. You don't like Tony?
I'm
not going to call you that, Joe. I'm just curious. Like, is that what were you called before you were called Amos?
Tony.
You were a Tony, yeah. Not an Anthony, not a
No. Huh. In fact, in third grade, I went and walked into class, and they had all of our names on the thing. And I was like, "Huh, that's interesting. That kid's got the same last name I have. I haven't seen that before. I wonder who this Anthony kid is. Where's my seat?
Where's Tony at? Oh, that's funny. Does anyone still call you Tony?
My mom, my Aunt Paula and Uncle Bob, basically the family that I grew up around still calls me Tony.
The pre-Amos crowd.
It helps that I don't have any friends from previous to ninth grade, and all the ninth grade kids are still my friends, and you know, that's where it came out and became a thing. So they've stuck to that, and it's just been Amos since high school.
There's a class of naming like that. That my dad had, and he was one of the few people besides yourself that I know that had that. He grew up being called Dwayne because that was his middle name, and his first name was William, which was the same as his dad. So to differentiate, they said Dwayne. But then when he went into college, everyone called him William, or you know, they would say like William, or do you prefer Bill? And he, I guess, just said, you know, Bill sounds great. Call me Bill. So he was Bill to everybody who didn't know him in high school or earlier, and Dwayne to everybody else.
Well, I will add to it a little bit in that my mom's second husband was also named Anthony. So I was Little Tony.
And he was Big Tony. Oh, because there were two. Yeah.
Uh-huh. For about five.
That's
five
a
or
gangster
six
name right there. Little Tony.
Little Tony.
Especially as tall as you are. Hey, it's Little Tony. He's called Little Tony because he's so big. Yeah. I don't know why that accent was where I went, except maybe Sopranos. I blame Sopranos.
It's a Soprano accent.
We are not here to talk about your name, though. We are here to talk about the word veteran. You chose veteran as your word, and you are one. You are a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces, correct?
I am. I spent 24 years, 2 weeks and 1 day in the United States Air Force.
And so retired. That you enlisted, you decided to go in, and then you retired.
It was honestly, it was the lesser of evils because I grew up in a really small town where, you know, 350 people, there was exactly three jobs in the entire town. And if you weren't related to somebody important, you didn't get one of those jobs. So it was a way to get out and see the world, get an education, which I never really did, and have, you know, gainful employment for at least the near term. And that near term turned into 24 years.
So when did you enlist?
1995, August 17th of 1995. Mm-hmm. So how old that worked out really well. I was 18.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. So right at the beginning.
Yep. I took summer vacation off. Things were a little bit more liberal back then where you could choose when you wanted to come in. Now they kind of schedule it out a ways, but then you could basically choose. And I was like, well, how about the end of summer? Like, that sounds great. I didn't realize that I'd be in Texas in the middle of August doing drill.
Mm-hmm. That sounds lovely and sweaty.
It was one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably the second one more than the first. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I know you, we work together. Obviously you edit the show and we work together on DTNS and other things. You seem to have, I want to say, a love-hate relationship with the military, but maybe that's too strong on both ends. How do you feel about being a veteran?
Being a veteran is different than how I feel about being a veteran is different than how I feel about the military service.
Okay. And yeah. Let's start with the first then. How did you feel about the military service?
I hated it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So maybe not too strong on that end.
It's a matter of the job I had, the assignments I had, and my personality type didn't jive.
What was your job? I think that's important to tell people.
I was an aircraft electrician, so electrical environmental specialist. Basically, I worked on any type of aircraft that we had up into the newest generation, the F-22, F-23. My job doesn't exist for those aircraft. But previous to that, the electrical systems, which obviously, you know, there's a lot of wires in airplanes, that can go from flight control surfaces. It can talk about the lights, the landing gear, all that kind of stuff. And then it also goes into the environmental systems. So the cabin pressurization, the air conditioning and the heating and things of that nature that, you know, they kind of slammed them all together a few years before I joined. The two career fields, the electrical career field and the environmental career field, were slammed together. And we had the duties of both. So that's what I did.
And was that something you were interested in or something they just put you in? And you're like, okay, I guess this is what I do now.
I originally wanted to come in and be a cop, be a security forces person or security police at the time, so that I could do my 4 years and then go to the academy and become a police officer in my local area and become sheriff and become mayor, become governor and become president. That was my life plan.
Was your plan. Wow. Nice. That's the other plan besides becoming a lawyer, which is what all the other people who become president have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem came in that they couldn't guarantee a certain job. So I was like, okay, well, I like computers and electronics, things like that. So they put me in the electrical career field, which I later found out was not where the computers were.
Oh yeah.
And then of the jobs in the electrical career field that popped up, electrical and E&E, working on aircraft, things like that seemed the most interesting. I had no idea about the culture of the career field or where you could be stationed, things like that. So it was, you know, one of like five jobs they gave me and I was like, that one sounds cool. So
do you think enlistees now have a better, chance of avoiding those kinds of things because you can research so much better with the internet than you could in 95?
It's not just that, but you actually have your job picked out for you before you even go to basic training now, because they're so specific on who they're recruiting and when they're recruiting for those jobs. They've really streamlined that process. So you know exactly what your job is before you even step foot in basic training. Okay. And your job selection might affect when you get to go to basic training, in fact.
And it sounds like, you know, job selection might be a little out of your hands, too.
It certainly was in my day. It was kind of a crapshoot. It's kind of like getting an assignment. You put in what you wanted and hope for the best. And now it's a matter of, well, if you want to leave at this time, these are the jobs open to you according to your ASVAB scores, which is a generalized test.
Yeah.
It's a generalized test that you take it's an aptitude test to see where you might, you know, where you might fit best in the military.
I took the ASVAB to possibly join the Navy, which I did not do, and did great on it and not so great on the flight part.
Fair, fair. Yeah. The area that I wanted to go into computers was actually part of the general, or no, not the general, the admin portion of it, which is where I scored the lowest on the ASVAB. So might have been a great idea to listen, but I don't know. I still would rather have gone into computers.
Okay, so I sidetracked you from where you were going originally because I wanted to set the stage of what you did. But you were talking about why you did not like the military service. And it sounds like maybe there's a bit of the root of that story in the fact that you were into computers, but you got put into electricity.
Well, a large part of it is different career fields in the military, at least in the Air Force. I'm sure it's similar situations in other branches of the military. Different career fields are grouped together and you work a lot with them. And there's a culture in each of those different subsets. And in the aircraft maintenance culture, it just wasn't something that I particularly flowed well with.
Mm-hmm.
The certain jobs have preference over certain duties, and there's a lot of subjectivity, and you have to know the right people and be the right person and make the right jokes, that kind of stuff. I did like the fact that most of the maintainers talk like sailors and have really crude jokes and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's right up my alley, as you know. And that really flowed well. But working, you work a 12-hour shift for 20 days in a row, where the 12-hour shift doesn't include showing up an hour early to make sure you get tools and turnover, mm-hmm. and then staying an hour late to turn in your tools and give the next crew turnover. And, you're getting paid the same as the guy that's working 8 hours pushing paper over in the office over there.
Right.
There's not a lot of... We have names for people that don't make airplanes go in the air. We call them noners. And that noner versus generator idea, that philosophy, it permeates. And there's a lot of animosity that's built up. And now that I'm out of the military, I'm married to an admin person who... we have conversations regularly about her job. There's a lot of perspective there that I never got when I was serving that would have really helped me understand at least somewhat where they were coming from and the struggles that they had and how they're not too different from just slaving away for 12 hours a day on the flat line in the weather.
Yeah. Did you marry a nonner?
I did.
That's love right there. Okay. So, let's go from there to the idea of veteran, because we're 14 minutes in and we really haven't got to the idea of veteran, because the idea of veteran is you are no longer in the service. You are a veteran, right, of the service. So why did you pick that word?
There are so many issues revolving veterans that people think they understand. And some people might, but there are so many layers to being a veteran, whether you're a full retiree like me, if you've got 100% permanent total disability, the way that I do, I have like the mega soup idea of retirement. I retired as an E7, 24 years. I've got a decent pension paycheck. I've got a good disability paycheck from the troubles that I had in the military and in the physical, ailments that bother me still.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I'm not incapacitated in a way that affects me on my family life. I'm not in a hospital. I'm not missing a leg, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I kind of won the lottery on all that. But beyond just that, there are so many issues that involve veterans that I don't think people are really aware of. And until you hear it from someone who's been in the situation and seen some of the minor struggles, I don't think you can really understand the major ones.
So I imagine most people who aren't ex-military or current military think, okay, you're talking about fighting? Are you talking about seeing action? What are you talking about?
Well, there's that. And again, this is one of the areas where I won the lottery. I served in combat zones, but I never saw combat directly. I supported combat aircraft, put pilots in the air that risked their lives and came back, and I fixed mm-hmm. the jet and they went back in the air. But there are, as a veteran, there are different aspects to life that are different forever. The way you see the civilian population and even like a Veterans Day parade. Mm-hmm. Some veterans might think, oh my gosh, this is great. You know, thank you for putting this on. And then people are like me, like, well, you're putting this on, but it's just a show. You're not actually supporting anyone. You're just, you know, you're waving a flag, but you don't know what stands behind the flag kind of thing.
Yeah. I was just at a hockey game. I went to see the LA Kings over the holiday break, and they do what many, many sports teams do. This is not specific to the Kings. They will recognize a military service member, right? And during one of the breaks in the action, they ask them to stand up and everybody applauds, thanks them for their service, et cetera. I always wonder, what kind of person does that? And what do all the other veterans in the audience who, you know, just by statistics, there's a lot more than just that one person. What do they think of that? What do you think of that?
I think it's really individual to the veteran. Some veterans are really proud of their military service. They enjoy talking about it. They like telling the tales. They like talking to the younger generation and inspiring them to join the military. I am not that person. I'm the person that gets really uncomfortable when you say thank you for your military service. Like, what do I say to that? Like, my go-to answer is thank you for your appreciation. Hmm. I'm just naturally a bit of a cynical person. And when people do grand shows like that, it always makes me uncomfortable because it's a way of saying, I support the veterans. I'm here for them. But when's the last time you talked to one that's experiencing troubles? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, yeah. Do you know that like something like 22 veterans every day commit suicide? And it's not just mental health issues. It's not just being destitute and not having a way to merge back into civilian society. It's a combination of all these factors. And how much of that problem are you willing to look into, or are you just willing to stand up and clap when the flag is raised?
Yeah, and feel good about yourself. I was just driving on Veterans Parkway on my way back to the house, and that's the kind of thing you're talking about. It's a sign. It has a flag on it. It says Veterans. It's near the reserve headquarters in Los Angeles, so that's why it's called that. I'm not saying It shouldn't be called that, but you know, how much does that actually do? I would argue that those kinds of things do remind us that veterans exist, make us think about them. So they probably aren't worthless. But I know what you're saying, which is, but if that's the end of it, that certainly isn't enough. Do I have that right?
Yeah. And again, there are some veterans that are really proud of it. They see, you know.
And you don't begrudge them their moment, is what
no,
you're saying.
No, yeah, yeah. No, okay. Of course not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you had good service and you got out, and whether it was after a 2-year tour in Vietnam or, you know, 30 years and you came out as an E9 or, you know, an 08 or whatever, and you really enjoyed your service, you had built up a lot of camaraderie with your fellow troops. And you see a sign on a bridge that says, you know, the William J. Smith Veterans Memorial Bridge or something like that. And that warms your heart, reminds you of the good years and all the brethren and sisters that you made along the way and things like that. Like, I'm not going to begrudge that. That's awesome. That is great for you. It's when that's the only thing that's being done, mm-hmm. and everyone... I don't say everyone. I don't want to generalize. When people,
but a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, when people think that is doing something for all veterans, it's not. It's not.
So you touched a little on what you think some of the challenges that the veterans face. And again, we're not trying to paint every veteran with the same brush, but many veterans face. You touched on some of those. Go into that a little more for me. Like, what do you think are sort of the main things that not just you, but people you know who have been veterans face when they come out?
So I will start with the one that I don't know if we want to say this on the show or not, but we're live streaming this, and Reverb Mike is bringing up employment, post-military employment mm-hmm. is... hard. Not only can it be hard to get jobs because you have a very specific skill set, a very specific work history that oftentimes has nothing to do with civilian life.
Yeah.
But also, just as I've learned recently, as you know, when I started working at Lowe's this summer, military values and, you know, employment values don't match with civilian ones at all.
Mm. Like you know, what? What's an example?
In the Air Force, we documented everything. If there's maintenance done, it got documented. If something was broken, it got documented. We had safety briefings. We knew trends, things to look out for, things that were, they were designed to make the mission easier to accomplish by keeping people safe, keeping people knowledgeable, and giving people the information they needed in order to find better ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Not leaving things to chance is what it sounds like you're saying.
Right. I was recently on a Ballymore, a lift at Lowe's, pulling a door off the top shelf, and it froze up halfway up. There's no maintenance records on here. I don't know if that's a recurrent problem with this machine. Uh-huh. And I don't have anywhere to write down, hey, this is happening. I get to the top and the panel, the control panel is like not securely fastened. It's coming off. That's concerning.
Yeah.
And then I get the door and I go to come down and again, it freezes up and I'm stuck 20 feet in the air with, you know, 500 pounds of doors leaning on me as I'm like, there's nothing, you know, there's no way. But nothing. There was no way to document that I was having those problems with the machine.
Right. In other words, in the military, there would be no question of what you would do. There would be a procedure, right. Yeah, and you would follow it. But in civilian life, not just in the situation you're in, but I can back you up on this. There's lots of situations where you're like, well, I don't know should I tell somebody? I guess I should tell somebody. But there's not a clear path of like, I know exactly what to do.
Yeah. Another situation, I'm going to focus these on Lowe's because that's my most recent experience. Yeah, my most civilian experience. We had a shortage of forklifts. Okay. Well, when are we going to get them fixed? Oh, we don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how do I know that they're broken? Well, we just know. So it's not written down anywhere. There's, like, we have a lockout tagout system as any industrial OSHA compliant place should. We're not using that. Well, I guess we can use that. Well, like, you know, and if one breaks, who fixes it? Oh, we contracted out. Oh, well, how do we know the status on those? No, that's for someone else to know. Well, but it's affecting my ability to do my job. And I have no knowledge you know, I have no agency in this process that is affecting my paycheck.
So that makes sense to me. And those are great examples. It does make me think, well, then surely... he says, knowing that it's not true, surely, you know, that would mean that ex-military people would be highly valued as people who are better at precision and safety and making sure things get done right. That's what the commercials say, you know, enlist now, get trained, and those skills will pay off throughout the rest of your life, even when you leave the military.
And they will. They will benefit you personally. If you go into a workplace and there are, as a person with a lot of experience with equipment in industrial situations, with handling orders and distributing parts, you know, things like that. Like I did aircraft maintenance for about 12 years before I started going into managerial roles and programs roles and things like that. None of that experience matters. The only thing that Lowe's cares about is the fact that if they hand me a sheet of jobs to do, those jobs are going to be done before I go home, which is valuable for you and the civilian company you're working for. But if you're not in the right market, if you're not looking at the right jobs, things like that, then you won't have those skills translated over and they won't be valued as much as they should be.
So getting the job is difficult because of the experience mismatch. Is that?
It's an expectation mismatch, I think. Mm-hmm. Because when you get out of the military, you expect to have these experiences apply to your job. Maybe not all of them. I'm not going to go to Lowe's and start replacing emergency generators on F-16s. Like, but, you know, obviously that's not going to be a thing.
Lowe's, as far as we know, has no F-16s.
No, I can't talk about contracts. but if you don't find the proper job that's going to take the values that you're bringing and lean into those and find ways to value those internally, you're going to feel a mismatch like me and several of the other veterans that work at Lowe's feel. And from what I've understood talking to several of them, that's no different than any of the other companies they've worked at since they left military service.
But you got the jobs. There's several of you there. So it's not impossible. You're just saying it's not the clear, like, well, I'm in the military, so it's going to be easier for me to get XYZ jobs. It's maybe not an advantage or even a disadvantage. How is it a disadvantage?
It's a disadvantage in your personal value, at least for me.
But I would think a hiring manager would say, oh, you're in the military. That's a plus. Is that not the case?
It can be. Okay. Some companies actually have policies that say we prefer veterans. We prefer disabled veterans. If we can find a job for you, you'll be at the top of the list, or you'll at least have preferential treatment as far as being picked up for jobs, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And to that extent, I don't know. Because when I applied to Lowe's, they were really hurting for people. So they gave me a call like 2 days later. They were like, hey, can you start tomorrow? So it is a matter of how you get hired and what you get hired for and what you're looking for and what you want to do. And I think that's something that really needs to be watched for. If you're in the civilian workplace and you have hired veterans, maybe ask them, what satisfies you about this job and how can we enhance your satisfaction with this job? Because that will improve their performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are the limitations that you have? Like I have several physical ailments, but none of those limit me. However, dealing with people that think they're management is one of my biggest problems.
That's not specific to veterans.
Well,
that's a universal complaint. That you know.
It's more specific to me actually, because I've got some mental issues revolving toxic leadership and misplaced trust and things like that that occurred to me during deployments that have changed how I view management and what management should do. And that's one of the battles that I personally have.
Gotcha.
So not all PTSD comes from battle.
Comes from combat. That's an interesting thing to discuss too, because I think that is also what a lot of people assume is like, oh, well, first of all, there's some discussion of whether PTSD is the right word and whether PTSD is being used as kind of a catch-all for things that some of which are, some of which aren't. But, you know, using it in the less clinical sense to just mean, having been affected by something in a way that lasts and you need to get counseling in order to resolve it. I think there's more acceptance of the idea. And that's actually causing the problem with using PTSD too widely, where it's like, oh, I have PTSD from this traumatic experience, even though I wasn't in the military. But when it comes to the military, people assume, oh, a grenade went off next to you, right? Or something like that. And I think it's great to bring up examples of why, yes, obviously that could be a cause, but there are more causes than just that.
Yeah. And I want to clarify that I don't use PTSD as necessarily a catch-all. Mm-hmm. That is a clinical diagnosis that I've been given that was a surprise to me based on years of counseling and a few psychiatric panels of going through some stuff. And it took years to kind of deconstruct that and figure out why I have heightened anxiety and, lowered ability to think clearly and have other issues during certain situations, especially ones that relate to those events that happened during that particular deployment. And it took years to get to understand that. So that is not something I ever wanted to use. I never wanted to use that term myself, but that was the term given to me by the doctors who supposedly know. So...
And that I wanted to, and you helped me make that point clear, is that there's a real thing. And then there's, I'm trying to think of good examples. Depression is another one where there is a clinical definition that I have been diagnosed with personally, and people use that more widely. But we're talking about the actual clinical
Yep.
Diagnosis of it. And you know, I don't want to make you uncomfortable or get, you know, get you to talk about anything that you don't want to talk about. But in general terms, as general as you want, you know, what are those kinds of things that people might not be aware can cause stress disorder? It doesn't have to be about yourself.
So the biggest one, of course, is combat related. That is, you know, very stressful. Even if you're not injured in the event, just being around it and being a medic as people are coming back from battle can be highly stressful and can induce PTSD for years.
Mm-hmm. And medics aren't always doctors?
No. Well, yeah. most medics are not. Yeah. Usually, in a situation like that, I believe you'd have like one or two actual medical doctors and then several nurse practitioners. But most of the people that you're going to see on, if you go into a clinic, you're going to see maybe a doctor or a nurse practitioner, and everyone else is going to be just a medic. Well, I'll say just a medic. They're the ones that do all the work.
Trained in the basics.
They're actually, especially like in the Army, they're trained in really advanced stuff.
Okay.
They train them up as far as they can go without the government coming in and saying, you need a license for that.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
For me, the opposite end of the spectrum is my case where I wasn't in a single traumatic incident. I wasn't in a couple traumatic incidents. I was in a prolonged series of heightened stress for about 7 months with really no time to decompress between that. Mm-hmm. And that continued elevated stress level due to, again, poor leadership and toxic leadership led me, it being stressed for that long at that height of that high of a level changes your brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. And makes it to where your brain now responds differently because it's been in a stress mode, a survival mode for so long that's just how it thinks it is now. And it takes years to decompress that and possibly never fully recover to be a normal functioning brain after that. So it can be a single event. It can be prolonged stress. It can be anything in between. And all of that can lead to a diagnosis of PTSD, and all of it can have different effects on people. I still, once in a while, a loud bang will happen at work and I'll flinch really hard. And people will ask me, well, you know, where did you see combat? Well, I didn't. Mm. That wasn't a shell shock moment. Yeah. That was a instant stressor that my brain just didn't quite process in a way that is normal for people who hear a tumble of lumber, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It manifests very differently depending on the person and your situation and everything else. So
we talked about jobs, and mm-hmm. we talked about one particular kind of very common fallout. What else? What else are the challenges? And we'll get to positives too, and whenever you want. But what else are the things you want people to know? Hey, you may not realize this about what veterans are facing out there.
I want to stress that post-military life, beyond transitioning back to civilian life and beyond transitioning back into a home life that is stable, because it never is quite stable when you're in the military, there are so many programs out there to help veterans, and there is so little resource for people to reach out and get information for. There's the VA has tons of programs, and if you call one number, they'll give you a long list of stuff that may apply to you, but they can't tell you which ones do. You call on a different day, you get a different person, and you get an entirely different list. Hmm. And now they will tell you all about the programs. There's no consistency in essentially what amounts to veteran aftercare.
So you want to bring the precision that you were talking about in your military work life to that, is what it sounds like to me.
Just some clarity.
Yeah.
Because the way Congress and has handled veterans over years, and I'm not going to get into politics here, but the way that the Congress has handled programs for veterans has been so patchwork for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, they try to address a single thing at a time, or address, you know, a wide swath of things with a single solution. And what happens is you have all these different programs and there's no real good way to find out, well, do I still qualify for TRICARE, which is the military healthcare system? Do I qualify for VA care, which, you know, for the VA giving me healthcare? Do I need to go get my own private insurance? How about my education benefits? Will the VA pay for this? They'll give me this program, but only if I do this. And how do I find out exactly how to get that? Well, there's one office to call. Well, can that office also tell me about using my GI Bill? No, they cannot. I have to call this other office over here. And, you know, it's spaghetti thrown against the wall and you're hoping you pick the right noodle for the problem that you're having.
Well, yeah.
It's completely cumbersome. So yes, we have programs to help veterans get educated, get reacclimated to civilian life, to get employed. And then you see a homeless veteran on the side of the road and you ask, well, why didn't they just use the programs that Congress gave them? They may not have known that any of those programs existed.
Mm-hmm.
They may not have been able to take advantage of them because of specific criteria those programs may have had.
And what you're saying is that there isn't just one place where they could have gone to be like, what's available to me?
Right.
Which seems inconceivable in this age of information organization at a higher level than we've ever had before.
And there's two problems to that, too, because all the information is there, but there's like six websites I could go to right now to learn about education benefits. Oh, and by the way, all six of those require me to log in with an ID.me account, mm-hmm. which if you're homeless and you're a veteran, you don't have the internet.
Well, you probably have access to it, but not consistently.
If you know about it and can go ask about it.
Right, right.
But like we still have Vietnam veterans that are living under bridges because they don't know what programs are available. And we have the programs available that are underfunded because nobody's using them because nobody's doing the outreach
just
necessary.
People don't know they're there. Yeah, it's a circle.
You know, and Congress throws money at it and says, well, we have the programs and then the veterans are out there and there's just a huge disconnect. And it's one of the things that I wish I had the time. If I had, you know, the classic question, right? Like if you had unlimited money and you didn't have to work for a living, what would you do? I would do veteran outreach. That is my biggest thing. Kids with cancer, I'd help them. You know, we do Extra Life every year. Things like that. But what would I actually spend my time doing? Veteran outreach.
Yeah.
And I don't really like talking to veterans about old war stories, stuff like that. Like that'd be very cumbersome, but it is so important to me that is the thing that I would do.
It seems like an easily solvable problem. This particular one, obviously there's lots of problems that we're talking about, but the one of like having someone able to match themselves. We have so many matching algorithms in the world. Like you couldn't have one that just, can you put ChatGPT on this and be like, hey, help me. I'll tell you who I am. Tell me what programs they are. I'm tempted to say there's got to be a startup idea there, but that's the problem is there's no money in that, right?
Right. And if there's no money, there's little innovation. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, other than people like me that really want the government to put money in the right places, there's no real benefit to anybody. And it just makes it really hard. Those are some of the things that veterans are facing that I don't know that the average civilian really understands.
And I think this is clear, but there's certainly PTSD from non-military sources. There's certainly lots of experience mismatch and job issues and job culture clashes in non-military situations. I think you did a good job of explaining, you know, what is different about what a veteran faces in those cases. The veteran care thing, I mean, there's analogs to that, I suppose, too, but that's very specifically a veteran case. Is there anything else that you're like, this is something that veterans face that most other people don't?
That covers most of it. But there is a level of mistrust within the veteran community when it comes to civilians, just in general, because there is a difference in perspective. Veterans have seen things and done things and committed to something. Mm-hmm. Most of them anyway, some of them are just there for the paycheck. Committed to something that they felt deeply for, and whether or not that, you know, that feeling still exists, spoiler for me, it doesn't. There is a level of commitment that was given to an entity that the average civilian has not experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And when I feel that when civilians think of veterans, and I know veterans are technically going back to civilian life, all that, but for this example, when civilians think of veterans, they think of people that have gone off and done something and maybe seen some stuff, come back and everything's good to go, or, you know, maybe they didn't come back and they need, you know, their family need a little help. But oftentimes what they just need isn't a thank you or, a quick hi or a little fake salute or a bridge named after them. What they need is just to be asked if they're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause a lot of times they're not, but they're not going to say it to the people they love, because we don't, in general, we're not trying to bring war back.
Yeah.
You know, we put a lot of that away. And sometimes just being asked, hey, how are you doing today?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you doing? And being genuine about it and wanting, you know, willing to sit and listen and know that you may not understand all of it, but just being willing to listen is cathartic, at least on a small scale. And sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah.
And I know that applies to, you know, just people in general, but
sure,
specifically to veterans. Don't ask them about where they served, because a lot of people don't want to talk about that. Don't ask them if they saw combat. Oh, geez, do not ask people if they saw combat. That is, like, nobody want, if they want to tell you about that, they're going to tell you about that. You don't have to ask. Just ask if they're doing okay. Like, yeah, if they've, you know, that's it.
I like that phrasing. Are you doing okay? Not how are you doing? Because in English, anyway, how are you doing? The answer is great. Doesn't matter what's true. It's just a protocol, right? It's like Sinek. How are you doing? Oh, I'm great. How are you? Great. You doing okay? Provokes a different response.
Right. It's just something a little different. It can still be a yes or no if they just want to blow you off. And, you know, sometimes that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But it also phrases it in a way that makes them think, oh, they're actually asking.
Yeah. Yeah. And mean it. Don't say, are you doing okay? And then when they start to, gosh, I'm really busy, I'd love it.
Yeah. That would have the exact opposite of that. That would just resecure their insecurities.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I will say, however, a little change of beat here. There are certain things about my military service and about being a veteran that I really do enjoy.
That was going to be my next question. So go ahead, shoot.
I have built some camaraderie with people. I have a friend by the name of Junior. It's actually Greg, but whatever. We all call him Junior. Like, he's a ride or die. We served together in Korea. We worked the bar together, like a literal squadron bar. We worked the flight line together. We had other issues. We were in a band together like that. We were only stationed together for about 7-8 months.
Wow. But
that's a friend
that's
for
a
life.
Yeah.
He's a friend for life. Like, you know, there's no issues there. Also served with my best friend from high school, Kent. We never served in the same unit, but we served alongside each other a few times, and it only strengthened our friendship. I was able to see parts of the world. I was able to get drunk in parts of the world that I never thought possible. You know, if my high school self wouldn't imagine walking home after leaving a dry country on my 21st birthday, arm in arm with my supervisor, one of us on each side of the line in the middle of the road so we didn't get lost.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, you know, there are a lot of memories. There's a lot of great things. I learned, I learned so much. Electrical theory. I learned about how airplanes fly. I got to work in F-15s, F-16s, work around F-22s. You know, I've been completely encapsulated in the wing of a C-5. It wasn't fun. It wasn't great, but I did it. I was up there for about 4.5 hours until finally I got a cramp and I had to climb back down because I just couldn't uncramp it.
Yeah. Not while it was flying, I'm guessing.
No.
Because you're here. Yeah.
Yeah, no. It was firmly on the ground and broken.
Yeah.
thus the need to be in the wing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of stories. I got most of an education. I never got my bachelor's degree, but that was by my choice because I just didn't enjoy school that much. Whereas I did get my associate's degree. I took some fun classes, and all that was paid for by the military. My children are currently going to school based on my service. So their school is being paid for right now because I served for as long as I did. I met my first and second wife through the military. The first one was a civilian. Second one was a fellow military member. And her and I are still married. It's been next month will make 16 years.
Hey, congrats. That's awesome, man.
So there are a lot of things about the military. I love the fact that I have two coworkers at Lowe's. One's a Marine and one is a former Army. And yes, you never say former Marine. I don't know who came up with that term, but it doesn't apply. Once a Marine, always a Marine. That is they go into battle wearing shiny things on their uniform. Like I'm not disparaging them at all. But I can just immediately based on knowing that they served, there are certain things, certain jokes you can have and certain conversations you can have right off the cuff that I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you feel about people who used to work at CNET, if there's certain conversations you can immediately have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but just finding out they worked at CNET, at a certain time, they're like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Well, I have that with about 1 million people that served while I served at these places where I served, you know. So I can talk about, one guy is a crayon eater, and every time he writes something down, I'm like, oh, you lost your crayon because, you had to use a pen. The little things like that, like, well, if we can't lift it into the truck and get it in there, can you just yell at it and order it to do it itself? You know, like there's things like that, you know, and you don't get those particular aspects of life in most places.
It's a culture. That's what you're describing. It's a culture that, you know, I can appreciate, but I don't experience.
Right. So there are great things about it. I love the fact that I am a retired 100% disabled veteran at this moment right now with the aptitude that I have and the lifestyle I live that allows me to be in a fairly affluent area of Alaska so that I have access to and the ability to find the resources necessary for the, you know, for the care that I need to be a better husband, better person and better father. Because all those things are things that I need to work on every day. And I have those resources available to me, and I've been able to find them on my own because I'm technically savvy and because I'm curious and because I won't take no for an answer when it comes to certain things. My current life as a veteran is probably not any different than most civilians that have never served, but there's always that extra little bit. It can be an anchor that drags you down a little bit and keeps you from fully expressing yourself, or it can be wings that give you just a little bit of an edge to understand how things should be and how things can be more efficient and how they can be better for the other people, depending on the situation. And it's really dynamic way of living, I think.
Yeah. Well, thank you, first of all, for anticipating my question and finishing with the positives. And thank you for sharing all of this. I do have a specific question that is selfish to me. But I want to make sure that we've touched on everything you want to touch on before I get to it.
I will say one thing that just came to mind because my wife just texted me. When I left military service, I did so with a program called SkillBridge that allowed me to work in the civilian world while still getting a military paycheck as a way to train me for future jobs. And Tom, I worked for you and Jenny Josephson as an intern. Which was great because it gave me 6 months of Jenny telling me how everything I was doing was wrong and you telling me that I will get better and I'm a better editor and producer. And, I have a great relationship with you and with Jenny, and that has taken so many different levels and areas of life, and I'm very thankful for that. My wife is trying to retire right now, and they're looking at cutting back on the SkillBridge program because certain people decided that they were going to intern at the golf course for 6 months with officer pay, is the my understanding of it. So even the programs that we have are fragile, and we need to take advantage of them while we can, because someone is bound to abuse them. And that's so that's my way of saying thank you for the opportunity. A way to show that even the programs that we think are really awesome can be stripped away at just the typing of a letter from a 3-star general sitting in an office in the Pentagon going, I don't like that.
Well, maybe just tighten it up so people can't intern at a golf course. Don't get rid of the whole thing. I mean, come on.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. You fix it, you don't take it away.
Like, yeah, exactly. Well, I benefited from that program by having you, you know, do some things for us and get involved with what we do. And so it's a special program. I'm appreciative of that program myself. My last little thing I wanted to ask about was because and 2 episodes ago we talked about K-pop with Gail Carriger. Because BTS went into the Korean military, there's all this interest out there of like, you know, oh, the military service, the mandatory military service. Everyone in the country, if you're not aware, in South Korea, who is a male, has to serve at least 18 months, depending on the service. It might be longer. There's alternative services and things like that. When you were stationed in Korea, did you interface with the Korean military in any way? And did you interface with that mandatory military service culture? I'm just curious.
Not in an official sense. My job was separated from the Koreans that were on the same, because we were on their base. Like, it's not an American base. It's a Korean base that they're letting us use 99% of. But I did get a chance to talk to some people in the civilian world who were also serving, or, you know, off duty kind of things.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And my understanding is similar to when I was in Turkey, who they also have a mandatory 2-year conscription service for males, that not all of them like it. Not many of them are going to continue the service, but they all understand it. And it was never, I never felt that it was a point of contention. Like, they're like, oh, I've got to do this thing.
And I guess I was curious too, if you noticed either in Turkey or South Korea, because I didn't realize you were stationed there too. Did you notice a difference in how their militaries worked because of that? Or was it just something that seemed like any other?
In Korea, it was basically indistinguishable. You would know unless you asked him, hey, are you in conscription service or have you, you know, made it a career? In Turkey, it was very clear that if you were, I mean, you were given a choice. You could either enlist, or if you had the right people, you could get commissioned and, you know, go to college, all that kind of stuff. But that was your life choice. Like, that was your career from that point until whenever you decided to retire or whatever. Or you could enter the conscription service, in which case you were there for, I think, 2 years. And the conscripts were very easily identifiable. They had slightly different uniforms, and they served tea, picked up trash, swept floors. It was not your tip. They weren't working on airplanes. They were
the
service personnel. It was very easy to distinguish. So
yeah, that is not the case in South Korea, from my understanding. They learn how to throw grenades and do all the rest of the stuff that everybody does in basic. Put on guard duty more often. But
they also didn't. I don't think they gave them weapons either in Turkey.
Interesting.
So guard duty would have been like, I'm checking IDs. That guy over there will shoot you.
Hey, could you shoot him?
That being said, and I know this is probably the most contentious part about this whole conversation right here, but I would support a conscription service in the United States.
Really?
2 years.
No kidding. Now, is that because you had to do it, so a conscription service feels like not a problem, or
no? I feel, and this is something a previous guest of yours, Brian Hoffman, and I have had discussions about. I feel that your country owes you the benefits of living in the country, and you owe the country your taxes and your service.
Mm-hmm.
So that my idea there would be you graduate high school, you spend 2 years in a well, it wouldn't even be 2 years. It'd be basically three semesters in a conscription service where you are learning the basics of things that they don't teach you in school, actual service, like how to, you know, like how an office runs and things like that. You're kind of like the turkey folks.
You're not saying conscription service of you know, learning to shoot a rifle necessarily, although it could be. You're saying conscription service of a wide variety of things, not just military.
Yeah, of all, and in return for that, you would go to a trade school for free. You know, because that's essentially what you're doing with the GI Bill anyways. You're learning a skill. Yeah, you're going to school, learn a skill to do something after the military. And I think that whole program would be really beneficial. I mean, I'm up to, I can be persuaded either way on it, but I don't begrudge the countries that do it. I may not like the way, like say Turkey was treating their conscripts. I think that was a little lowly, but I could see something like that really working. But I would make it gender neutral. I wouldn't make it men only.
Yeah, and widen things beyond just military.
Yeah. It'd be all types of government service in a variety of different aspects. It could be something that you're more interested in or not.
Well, that's a whole show right there. Just talking about the ins and outs of that. We could dive into that. So we'll have to bring you back at some point and maybe bring you back. I mean, you edit the show, but we'll have to do this again. Let's put it that way. We'll have to do this again and dig into that. This is a fascinating idea, and I think there's a lot of merit to it. No pun intended. Well, you know that we end the show with this or that. You promised you wouldn't look at my this or that's for you.
I did not.
I have not seen you in the dock since I made them. So are you ready?
I was last in the dock this morning at 5 o'clock my time when I was publishing the episode that went live today.
Yeah. The Matt Donnelly episode, the improv episode. Yeah.
Great episode, by the way.
All right, here we go. You did mention that you live in Alaska. So our first one is related to that. Polar night or polar day? Now I know you don't actually live above the pole, but you get the longish nights. You get the longish days. Which one do you prefer?
I am a night person in general, but I really do love those long summer days.
Yeah.
And I being a person that was on night shift for so long, I don't have a problem sleeping during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually go as much as I'm a night person, I would go with the long days.
Okay. Polar day. If you ever move to Svalbard, that'll be your favorite time of year. soju or beer?
Soju.
Yeah, see, I knew you were going to go that. I knew you'd have an easy time answering, but the audience is like, wait, what?
Yeah. Soju is so versatile. It's so crisp. You can take it by itself. You can have it flavored. You can put it in drinks. You can add it to food.
You can use it to beer like and get the best of both.
You could. And that's a whole nother drink. Yeah, soju all day. Soju is so good.
What's your favorite soju? The one that's in front of you is an acceptable answer.
Camisol has a strawberry that slightly chilled, not ice cold, but slightly chilled, maybe like over some ice. You could just sip on all day. And that's perfect.
Now, I am told, and maybe any Korean listeners in the audience can confirm or deny this, I'm told that within the country of Korea, the flavored things are no longer popular. That is, when you see a flavored soju, they're like, oh, that's for export. Yep. That they used to be, but they have no longer, they're no longer popular.
They have fallen out of vogue. Which is great because that was starting to happen right as I was leaving Korea. So I bought a lot of the flavored stuff fairly cheap.
Oh yeah. Everything must go. Nobody's drinking the dalgi soju anymore.
Yeah.
Fast or slow zombies.
This is one I have thought about every time we've recorded the show, every time I've edited the show, I've thought about this question in particular and how I would answer it were I ever a guest on the show. And I think I'm going to go with fast zombies.
Okay.
Not for the entertainment purposes.
Yeah, usually it's for like, oh, they're more exciting. Yeah.
Right. Why? No, I'm there for a quick death. I think if we have zombies going, I don't know that we stand a chance. Uh-huh. I'm just like, let me out.
Yeah.
Like
I want to join them quick.
I'm not trying to be terrified for the next 3 to 5 years only to die to a zombie dog or something.
It makes
like
a lot
that.
Of
like,
sense. Yeah, it does.
You know, they'll be more entertaining to watch, and then it'll just be over, and I won't have to worry about
and then I'll be
breaking open 40-year-old cans of pork and beans to try to survive. Like,
I got you. No, that's fair, and I mean, you have an unfair advantage in hearing every answer, but yes, definitely an answer we have not had before. Savory or dessert crepes?
Dessert. I have the biggest sweet tooth, especially when it comes to first thing I'm going to eat in the morning. I don't know that I've ever had a very savory crepe, though. So there could be some bias there, just an experiential bias. But yeah, I'm going to go with the sweet.
With the sweet. That's an unusual answer, but it's also my answer. I actually like savory crepes just fine, but I just assume they're going to be sweet. And you can have strawberry crepes with your strawberry soju.
See, that's just a breakfast of champions right there.
Mobile or desktop video games?
I would have said desktop until the summer when I got a Steam Deck. And it really blurs the lines.
It really does.
I'm going to say desktop video games in a mobile platform.
That is an interesting answer because desktop has become mobile thanks to the Steam Deck and even the Switch, you know.
Yeah, the Ally and the, you know, the others, yeah.
Yeah.
I really prefer desktop games over mobile-specific games, but now that you can take desktop games on the go, there's no...
So your answer is desktop, but you really like having them mobile.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right.
Yep.
Dogs or cats?
For so many reasons, dogs. One, I'm allergic to cats. Two, I have enough teenage and young adult daughters in my life that I don't need anyone else acknowledging my existence but not caring if I'm here. I've always had dogs. I really love having dogs, and dogs are just, if you're looking for a companion, there's nothing better than a dog.
Yeah. I like that. And it's true. I mean, there's good arguments for cats, and we've heard them on this show, but and I grew up with cats. So I was raised by cats, so to speak.
The first time my eyes wanted to pop out of my head, I was an anti-cat guy. Like the allergies rule all. There's no getting around it.
Fast Prime or Kit Zoom?
Oh.
These are photography terms for those who don't recognize them, and I know Amos is a big photographer, so.
I'm going to go with Fast Prime. There's something you can do with the prime lens that you lose your versatility, but there's something about the way a prime lens not only changes your photograph, but also changes how you have to photograph. That really speaks to me and really makes photography a visceral experience that you have to experience each individual part separately to combine into what you want to take the picture of, like to create the photo. Where with a zoom, you can... It takes away certain aspects of it. Like you can try to frame it in 43 different ways. Maybe it's too much choice in that aspect. And I just like
Fast Prime locks you down is what you're saying.
Yeah. I really love, I only own one Prime, but I really love Prime lenses.
But so you've only ever had one, but you're.
Well, I've used several.
Yeah.
Because I've rented and I've borrowed and things like that. I only own one because it's a 50 mil 1.4 that, or yeah, 50mm 1.4 that is really amazing on my Canon camera, and it's fairly cheap, so it's like it hits the area of really great quality while also not costing an arm and a leg.
I guess we should. Do you mind explaining the difference? Because probably a lot of people listening are like, I get that he likes Fast Prime, but I don't understand what it is.
So a prime lens is not going to, it's only going to have one focal length. So like my 50 millimeter isn't going to be a 24 to 70. It's a 50 millimeter. If you want to zoom in, you have to zoom in with the sneaker zoom. Mm-hmm. Like you have to walk closer to it. Whereas a zoom lens is going to have a variety of focal lengths that it can get to. So you can go from really wide to really, you know, really wide of image with lots of background and lots of extra stuff on the sides to really focused in on a specific, you can focus in on the nose of a person from 100 yards away if you have the right zoom lens. Mm-hmm. It gives you the versatility that you can change the framing of your photograph really easily with a zoom lens because you can just yeah. tighten it up, you know, if you want to. Typically, they're not as fast as prime lenses. Almost always, they're not as fast as prime lenses, meaning you can't take pictures at they don't allow as much light in as a prime lens does because with the prime lens, you're using fewer actual pieces of glass, right. You know, actual lenses.
So more light, yeah. There's fewer things for it to get through, to get to
the, right, yeah. right. So they both have their benefits. Like I would never try a prime lens on a soccer field. That would be horrendous. But I would much prefer using a prime lens for street photography where I'm walking around and moving around anyway, or for event photography. It's really great because you already have it in your mind how far away you have to be for something to frame it the way it is if you have enough experience with your prime lens. So once you hit that point, you can just pick up, like for me, it's my secondary camera. You just pick it up, you take the picture, you drop it, and you keep moving, and then you can zoom in and get the different faces and different environments you want with your other camera or your other lens. Prime lens, there's something magical about a great prime lens, though.
All right, last one, hot or cold? You're in Alaska.
Cold.
Yeah.
I hate working in the cold, especially when I was in the military, doing the, like being on the flight line in 30 degree temperature with a 20 mile an hour wind under a B-52 in Louisiana with the rain coming at you sideways. God, that sucked. But as far as like life goes, I don't like to sweat. I didn't sweat when I was little, when I was growing up in Palmdale, California. And now I sweat a lot because I'm, you know, 60 pounds heavier. but yeah, I'd much rather be cold. I can always put more clothes on. I can cuddle with somebody or whatever. But when you're hot, there's only so much you can take off before they drag you away.
Yeah, there's a guest bathroom in our house that is always the coolest place if the air conditioning is on. It's the warmest place in the winter when the heater is on. Just the way it works. I still think of you sometimes going into that room during the summer when you were visiting and being like, ah, yes, this is the room I want to be in. because it was the coolest room in the house by far.
And then coming in from your garage during the video shoot.
Oh, yeah, which is the hottest room in the house by far.
Yeah. All I could think about was going into that bathroom and lying down on the floor.
Yeah. Well, Amos, thank you so much for chatting with us and for sharing your story. Like I said before, and you know, getting people to think about some things from a perspective that they don't have. That's what the show is all about. I really appreciate that, man.
Yeah, thanks for having this conversation with me. You know, it's weird being a producer and being the editor of a show and having all these things to say and never knowing where you would fit in. And when the idea for the word veteran came up, it was just it clicked.
It clicked, yeah.
And thanks for having me on. Thanks for doing the show. As your producer and your editor, I don't say it often enough, but man, this show is awesome. And I'm really proud to be part of it and really, really happy that you came up with the idea to do it. And I'm glad I could help you flesh out the idea. The show's great and all the guests have been amazing and I'm glad to, I'm proud to call myself amongst them now.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that too. If folks want to find out what else you do besides this, what should they do?
Honestly, if you want to get a hold of me in any meaningful manner, the best way to do so is either on TikTok at Ethan Kane or in the, DTNS, Discord.
Okay.
Like yeah. Those are the things the Discord I check more often than anything, but
brilliant.
That's where I've got my own channel in there. Just go in there and put, look for Ask Amos and, I'll be there.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank our producer, Anthony Lemos, as well. Thank you for listening to this show and telling your friends about it. You can get an ad-free version of this show with Acast Plus. Click on Access Exclusive Content at awordpodcast.com, and we'll have a word with you next time.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Sorry we kept you up, Zoe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.